2026 is shaping up to be a defining year for the Isle of Man, one that could set the tone for the decade ahead. With a general election on the horizon, a money valve visit on the calendar, and continuing pressures on the economy, housing, recruitment, and regulation, it's a pivotal moment to ask, what kind of island do we want to be? Across the business community, there's a clear sense of concern, a lack of optimism in the economy, and a lack of confidence in government's ability to manage public finances. But there's also a recognition that moments like this can spark real change. The United Kingdom has already mapped out a bold 10-year vision with Invest 2035. So where's our equivalent? What should the Isle of Man's long-term plan look like if we're going to stay competitive, resilient, and relevant on the global stage? That's the conversation that took centre stage at the recent IOD Autumn event, an evening designed not only to talk about politics and policy, but to think seriously about the island's future, how we attract investment, how we innovate, and how we define the next chapter of our story. In this episode, I'm joined by Alastair Ramsey, who was at the event with me. Together, we're unpacking the key talking points, the themes that resonated the most, and the big questions that will shape the Isle of Man beyond 2026.
What struck me was, well, for a start, they managed to get a very prestigious after dinner speaker in Lord Finkelstein, and I thought that was quite a coup for them, and he was very interesting. What struck me was that it was a relatively kind of muted tone in terms of their criticism of government, given that only about a week before they'd issued quite a strongly worded statement resulting from a survey of their members criticising government policies, the lack of engagement, also calling for a more national basis for elections and even reform of local authorities. But the tone of the evening was a lot more kind of forward-looking and positive. And also there were a number of members of Tynwald in the congregation, so to speak. So,
Do you think that's a reason why perhaps they were a bit muted? Because like you said, that survey was released. I've just got it open in front of me. I'll quickly just read the first excerpt. The Isle of Man branch of the Institute of Directors has released the results of its third policy voice survey, revealing widespread concerns among senior business leaders about the government's financial management, regulatory approach, and engagement with industry. Now, that doesn't sound like you're happy.
No, indeed not. And the theme of the evening was kind of securing the island's economic future over the next 10 years or so, 15 years, I guess. But I suppose that kind of event, you wouldn't just sit there slagging government off. And I suppose when you've got ministers in the audience, it's kind of impolite. But I don't think that kind of event would normally be very kind of negative and critical. Mm. But there were some themes that came out that were kind of implied criticism about the lack of a kind of national and international brand and vision for the island. We seem to have lost sight of that. And also an economic policy based on growing the numbers of population as a priority, rather than getting the business in and the population following.
If we just look back at the kind of pessimism around politics and things like that, that was something which Lord Finkelstein touched on. He said that Britain's also very pessimistic. They're going through a phase of what he described as depression politics.
And of course, whether we like it or not, I think our kind of political debate and our mood absorbs a lot of what we get from through the UK media. And you can also see that creeping in terms of immigration and so on. So, yeah, I guess if there's... And that's the negativity and, dare I say, cynicism about politics does come across the Irish Sea to us here. But I think we've probably always been fairly sceptical, to put it mildly, about politicians.
There was something which he also spoke about, which I imagine would be quite a drastic would have quite a major impact on the island if that was to happen, which was, we know that Rachel Reeves is going to be unveiling her autumn budget soon, and there is prediction of tax rises. He even said they may have to revisit the VAT arrangement. Obviously, we have a reciprocal agreement there, so whatever applies in the UK applies here.
Yeah, so if they put VAT up, that would be bad news for Isle of Man consumers and good news for the Isle of Man government, because we get a slice of the revenue. But the other thing that appears to be happening is an uptick in interest from UK residents who want to move here. And that's been reported, I think, by estate agents and advocates and so on. And that may be people worried about tax changes in the forthcoming budget.
He was speaking about biotech. There was a lot of discussion about artificial intelligence, but he was quite insistent that it's not just AI, it's biotech, quantum computing, and artificial intelligence.
Yes. And I can honestly say that I know virtually nothing about any of those subjects because I'm too old.
I know very little about quantum computers.
What I do know is that there's a big change already happening. And one of the panel, John Webster, former government economist over here, a man who knows his stuff, came up with an estimate of something like 18,000 jobs in the Isle of Man that could be at risk from AI. Well, that's half the workforce. So I think we need to know more about that. And it kind of plays into what happened at the government conference with their announcements about AI and so on.
Do you think that 18,000 jobs are at risk of being wiped out, or do you think it's more the job titles will change? Because there's a saying, which I'll say now, artificial intelligence won't replace you, someone using artificial intelligence will.
Yeah, maybe so. I really don't know enough about it, but I think we need a lot more information about this and how it will impact on the Isle of Man. And I think it's all very well government announcing an office of AI. I think they need to look very broadly at the implications for the whole of the Isle of Man, not just at business opportunities. It's across the economy, across society. How would you cope if great swathes of people were made redundant over the next 5-10 years? It would throw into question the viability of the whole structure of government and welfare state.
And one thing which I think it was Hannah Simon, she was talking about the biosphere, the climate. She was saying that AI uses an enormous amount of energy, obviously it does, but she thinks that AI will identify ways for itself to be sustainable.
Probably. Yes. I mean, the thing that occurred to me was that if it does require lots of energy, then that's a further argument for taking the opportunity of the big offshore wind farm that's being offered by Ørsted, because they could supply apparently whatever energy we need. I'm sure, surely we're able to do a deal with them on that basis.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about kind of leaning into the biosphere more for the economic strategy. I think one of the quotes was, sustainability is a core pillar. Lean into nature instead of decarbonisation.
I think one of the problems, I was listening to stuff on the biosphere at the government conference, and I think one of the problems that they've never quite overcome is the language around biosphere. That doesn't really resonate with the person in the street, biosphere and all that kind of eco language around it.
What does biosphere even mean? Because people say biosphere to me, and I don't really know what factors that involves.
I'm not entirely clear.
No.
And I know a lot of people believe passionately in it, and I think talking about the kind of national brand and international brand of the Isle of Man, biosphere kind of fills that space, I think. But still a lot of people don't really get it. And I think maybe using some kind of different language, there's something very kind of it's a UNESCO thing. It's a very kind of international bodies type language.
Because people talk about corporate jargon all the time, you know, sustainability, that, circle back. and I mean, it doesn't really mean anything.
No, I think it may well mean something, but it's just a bit vague, and maybe we could do with just, you know, bottoming it out a bit. And I'm sure there are people who've been working very hard doing this for a very long time, and I can think of former colleagues in particular who would probably be dismayed to hear me saying these things. But I still think that a lot of people on the island don't get it. And if we're going to use it as an internal and external brand, and I'm sure it has the potential for that, it relates to the Isle of Man being a very special place, then I think we need to just flesh it out a bit.
So I've just Googled the definition of biosphere. I'm going to read it to you. The biosphere is the part of Earth where living organisms exist and interact with the atmosphere, hydrosphere, and lithosphere. I don't know what lithosphere is.
That's a great slogan, isn't it? Very snappy. No, I think it, and I think it's interesting that a lot of the business people see the value in biosphere. Maybe they get it. Maybe they're more fluent in jargon than the ordinary person. I don't know.
But that's the thing, because we hear about solar panels, we hear about decarbonizing electricity, we hear about renewable energy very, very frequently. But people like Manx Utilities, when asked point blank, will things like the onshore wind turbines, will they actually save money from the unit of electricity? And they can't tell us.
I have to declare an interest on that topic because I'm actually vehemently opposed to the current onshore wind proposal. So I'm not a kind of objective voice on that.
Okay. Something which you'll probably be familiar with, they talked a lot about freedom to flourish.
Yes, and that goes back to the whole branding exercise. I mean, that was, gosh, I can't even remember when that was, but it was a major exercise.
Were you involved in any of that?
Only around the periphery, really. Right. I knew people who were. And it was a very interesting exercise to establish the kind of the ethos of the Isle of Man. What is this place all about? What is it that makes it special for people who live here and businesses who may want to invest? This was our kind of national, international branding exercise. And the core of that was this expression, freedom to flourish, for individuals, for businesses.
Has it become a bit of a cliche now? Because if you see it on Facebook regularly, people always, you know, they set out some gripe they have and then they go, freedom to flourish? I think not.
Whatever slogans government come up with will be used to attack them. I mean, anyone who can't get planning permission for their shed, it's, you know, freedom to flourish, you know, question mark. But it was an interesting exercise. And it's, the problem was that having established that concept, I don't think they really ever followed it through. And the politicians were just quite happy to have a slogan that they could repeat without actually then living that concept and seeing how it could actually be developed in terms of policies and so on.
It's almost like in the UK, whenever there's a general election, they have like a manifesto kind of catchphrase per se, which almost defines what their whole campaign's about. This is almost like that, isn't it?
It's a, on a national basis. But it was an interesting exercise, and because we don't have much of that in the island. We don't have political parties. Well, we don't have a political party system. So we're not used to politicians encapsulating their values and their vision in simple phrases. It would be very interesting if they attempted to do that, I think.
When we spoke to Lord Finkelstein, we obviously spoke about his impression of political parties. He seems to think that no political parties and independence is the ideal. What do you reckon on that?
I think he was highlighting the positives in the Isle of Man because he was a distinguished visitor and he was being polite.
Mm.
And I think his points were very interesting in that a lack of parties gives you a kind of greater freedom that you can disagree openly and then come to some kind of consensus. And that also, as he said, you can admit your mistakes. It was something that parties can't do. So the lack of that rigidity, I think, is something that he was highlighting.
Hmm.
That doesn't mean, in my view, that we haven't got fundamental problems with our system in terms of accountability, collective accountability of politicians, and the public mandate on which they operate.
Because although parties don't acknowledge they're wrong, we know that Timwald members have these private briefings where they might be able to agree that they were wrong in private, but in Timwald and Keyes, they don't say that they were wrong.
Not very often. And it's going to be very interesting that the economic strategy, which was launched to great fanfare only 3 years ago, now appears to going to be getting completely overhauled in the light of AI, something that you would have thought that the experts could have foreseen when they drew up the original economic strategy. So that's an economic strategy based on growing the working population. Now, in the face of a technology that's threatening to reduce very seriously the number of jobs, and we've heard an estimate of as much as 18,000 jobs, that doesn't really seem tenable. So my question would be, in terms of being candid with people, will the government make it clear that they are changing that quite radically now? Are they going to drop those targets? Mm. Will they admit that actually they took a bit of a wrong turn with that? Will members bring this up? Because, of course, all but two, as I recall, of the Timwald membership voted wholeheartedly for the economic strategy.
Mm. Do you think that the government is putting all of its eggs into the AI basket? I mean, if it's changed up this 15-year strategy, which it seemed very, very pleased with when it announced it, and like you say, 3 years down the line, it's suddenly being overhauled. But AI is constantly evolving. What AI is now will be completely different in a year's time.
Yeah, but I think that they're right to focus on it, and I mean, I know work has been going on in the Department for Enterprise, but I think it needs to be a national focus and not just looking at, you know, business opportunities and the economy, but right across society and in terms of the implications for public services and so on. So I think that they're right to do that, but I guess they will recognize also that this is evolving and it's a movable feast. And I guess we're moving into completely unknown territory, and it's pretty scary, especially for old chaps like myself.
Do you think the Chief Minister's scared by all of it? The fact that he is, I mean, this is unprecedented, you know, politically, economically, we don't really know what AI is going to be doing and the extent to which it might damage the economy, to the extent that it might actually grow the economy.
Yeah, I mean, there could be opportunities. We've always prided ourselves on being an agile jurisdiction, although it doesn't always look like that. But you know, so that we can, because we're kind of small and fleet of foot, we can, you know, take niche opportunities. So that there could well be some opportunities for people to make quite a lot of money. Whether there are opportunities to keep everybody in employment, another matter. And it will be interesting to see how this feeds into the general election debate over the next 12 months. I guess you'll get candidates starting to say things like that AI is important. Whether they'll say much more than that, it remains to be seen.
I mean, I spoke to Laurie Hooper about the government's announcement of a national AI office. Obviously, that was one of the key announcements in the government conference, less so about the IOD. But he was very much of the opinion that we've seen talk of an AI strategy, a national AI strategy coming from the Department for Enterprise. I think it was the Digital Department. And he seems to be under the perception that that has suddenly gone away and it's now been replaced by this national office for AI, which perhaps is that just, it sounds better on paper?
Yeah, I mean, I think the government conference, the annual government conference, which was an innovation of this administration, is a good idea. And I think it does help focus people on the agenda. And it's good for informing people who want to turn up. The problem with it is that the Timbal members feel kind of left out of the loop. And there are announcements there that seem to take them on the hop. And that you then get the subsequent Timbal questions, you know. And maybe there's a temptation when you're doing a conference speech that you need to have some news to announce. Mm. The question then is, how well thought through has it been? You know, is an AI office the most appropriate way of dealing with this evolving phenomena? I don't know.
It's interesting that there were some quite key announcements being made. And in the UK, obviously, the Speaker of the House of Commons, you often see him telling off whichever parties in government for announcing things to the media before bringing it to the Commons. And what we saw at the government conference, I know that it's not in law per se, but it's kind of political etiquette, isn't it, to tell your political representatives of quite major announcements first.
Yeah, and I mean, years ago they wouldn't have got away with it. I mean, there was protocols going back 20, 30 years where Timbal motions, upcoming Timbal motions or questions, could not be discussed by politicians in the media at all before the actual debate, which was really quite silly. But members do have a right, they think, and they may well be right, to hear about things first. And there were some significant announcements, and the government's now going to face a raft of questions about where did this come from, how much is it going to cost. I think last year they may have tried to brief members first about what was coming up. I'm not sure if that happened this year.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.